Most Wanted podcasts on BBC Sounds. Where is the missing crypto queen's billionaire scammer?
It starts to get very scary, very, very fast.
How did gangster's drug baron finally get caught?
He was taken completely unawares.
Why were Burn Wild's environmentalists labelled eco-terrorists?
For a long time, they were getting away with it, but that wouldn't last.
Uncover a new case
while the dog drags you out for a walk.
Listen to True Crime Podcasts on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
The famous Spa circuit is buzzing the day before the 2007 Belgian Grand Prix, and the press pack gather outside McLaren's impressive motorhome. But they're not there to snap a pic of a star driver or celebrity guest. Two old F1 adversaries have announced that they'll be meeting to clear the air. After months of scandalized press headlines, in-depth investigations, extraordinary hearings, and a punishment to the tune of $100 million, Ron Dennis and Max Mosley are going to put this whole Spygate business behind them. A bit of good press is just what the doctor ordered.
And they stood there, standing next to each other, shaking hands like, you know, like two politicians meeting for a state discussion. And the legend has it that Mosley leant over to Dennis and said, $5 million was for what you did. $95 million was for being a, and I can't say the word, four-letter word. It begins with a C.
You can fill in the gaps yourself.
Now, Mosley says he didn't say that. He says that it was actually Bernie Eccleston who said that to him about the events of Spygate. But it's a better story if Mosley says it to Dennis on the steps of the McLaren motorhome, right? So,
whatever the story, it's clear the political hangover from Spygate is far from over. Oh, and there's the small matter of the actual racing. The 2007 season isn't over yet. McLaren might be out of the Constructors' Championship, but they still have a chance for a big victory in the Drivers' Championship. Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso are at the top of the standings, with Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen behind them in third. In two races' time, one of these three men will be crowned champion. The scene is set for a nail-biting climax to the 2007 season.
I still can't believe it happened. The extent of it, the way it was done.
It was like a bomb that exploded within the team.
I've never heard of anything like that at that level. That's crazy.
Would you do anything to win? You probably would.
Everyone's so arrogant. They thought they were untouchable.
This has turned into an all-out brawl, and it's happening in front of the entire world.
Formula One really looked into the abyss in 2007.
One of the biggest stories in the history of Formula One. But it will haunt the people involved for as long as they live.
I'm Pete Tong, and from BBC Sounds and BBC Five Live, this is Sport's Strangest Crimes, Spygate. Chapter 8, The Winner Takes It All. It's the penultimate F1 race of the 2007 season in China. 22-year-old Lewis Hamilton must be pinching himself. He's got the chance to make history and win the Drivers' Championship in his debut season. And given his lead in the standings, if he places third in tomorrow's race, the title will be his, with a race to spare. A mere mortal might crack under the pressure, but this is Lewis Hamilton. In qualifying, he beats Alonso by more than half a second. That's an age in F1, which prompts the Spaniard to kick a door off its hinges at McLaren HQ. It's more than enough for Hamilton to take pole position. He can almost taste an incredible victory. But for now, he's got to push those tantalizing thoughts to the back of his mind. On a rain-soaked Shanghai track, he takes the lead from lights out. But as the morning drizzle fades, the track begins to dry out, and it's playing havoc with Hamilton's tires. Surely this is the time for a pit stop. They've worn down to the point that even the commentators high up in the booth can see it. But Fernando Alonso is less than 20 seconds behind Hamilton. A pit stop would mean being overtaken by him. Mark Priestley was working in the McLaren pit that day,
because Lewis's side of the garage was so intent on just beating Fernando, they stayed out way longer than they should have done to try and, you know, cover his strategy on the other side of the garage, that it cost them. The tyres wore completely away.
Forget Kimi Raikkonen. Forget Ferrari. For Team Lewis, this is all about beating Fernando Alonso, whatever the cost. The toxic rivalry between the teammates has worked its way deep into the McLaren garage.
We spent so much time fighting each other. Lewis fighting Fernando, Fernando fighting Lewis, and the teams of people around those drivers being so focused on just beating the guy on the other side of the garage because the relationships had broken down to such a level. So now there's an absolute desire just to beat the guy on the other side of the garage.
The jeopardy was so immense, even other team bosses were distracted from their own races by the state of Hamilton's tyres. Mike Gascoigne was watching from the pit wall.
You saw them on the track, you know. I mean, I remember sitting on the pit wall looking at them saying, what are they doing? Doing another lap? You know, that's madness. He's going to fall off here. All the tyres could explode. What are they doing?
When they finally call Lewis in, his tyres are so worn down, he can't make the turn into the pit lane, and he slides straight into the gravel pit. Hamilton keeps his engine running. The marshals try and push him out, but to no avail. Hamilton retires from the race, the first DNF did not finish of his young career. One extraordinary chance for the driver's title squandered. In the end, Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen takes the win in China, keeping his chances alive just. Fernando Alonso comes in second, also closing the gap on Hamilton. It's going to come down to the final race of the season, with the same three men still in contention. So with one race to go, we still don't have a winner. It's getting intense.
Yes, Pete, it's a dream for F1 journalists like me and fans because it's coming down to what we call in F1 a one-race season, a title decider. Sometimes in F1, there's an outright winner with a few races still to go in the season.
Looking at you, Max Verstappen.
Exactly. But with three potential winners, it's a super exciting final race in 2007. Of course, this makes it mega stressful for the teams.
And the drivers. OK, so I feel like I'm going to need you to hold my hand through this. What do each of the three drivers need to do to win?
All right, so at the moment, it's Hamilton's championship to lose. If he finishes first or second, the title is his, no matter how well the others do. Going into the final race, Hamilton has a 4-point lead over Alonso in the title race and 7 on Raikkonen. It's not bad. But even if they beat him, so long as he finishes quite high up in the top 10, top 5, he'll still secure the title.
And he's probably feeling like he has even more to prove after Shanghai.
Yes, absolutely. He's not going to want to admit it out loud, but Hamilton, just a rookie, must be dreaming of finishing his fairy tale debut season by claiming motorsport's greatest prize, the F1 world title. Now, on the other side of the garage, Alonso knows he'll need to beat his upstart teammate and buy enough to close out that 4-point gap. And out of the three, he's the only one who's already been an F1 world champion, and he's done that twice. Alonso's going for a hat-trick of drivers' championships, 3 in a row, and you definitely can't count him out. Then, finally, Kimi Raikkonen, he's also in the running, but he's still rated as an outside chance. To claim the title, Kimi needs to finish first or second and pray that the McLaren drivers finish further down the pack.
Right, let's take you to Interlagos, the home of the Brazilian Grand Prix, in the heaving metropolis of Sao Paulo. It's famous for its party atmosphere, more like a football match than a motor race, and the crowd goes wild when hometown hero Felipe Massa clinches pole position for Ferrari. Interlagos has one unique quirk. Unusually for an F1 track, it goes anti-clockwise. It's an extra demand on the drivers as they battle to be crowned champion. It's lights out and an extraordinary start. In a serene display of perfectly timed teamwork, Massa, starting from pole, moves in front of Hamilton, allowing Raikkonen to glide past. The two Ferraris are out in front, leaving Hamilton in third, but not for long. On the second corner, Alonso makes a hair-raising move and passes Hamilton on the inside. Hamilton tries to regain his position around the next turn. The Curva do Sol, He's right on Alonso's tail, challenging him. But then it finally happens. Lewis Hamilton makes a rookie mistake. He locks up his brakes and briefly runs wide. He manages to rejoin the race, but now he's in eighth position. All is not lost. If he can move up to fifth place, Lewis can still win the championship. He recovers steadily as the race continues and is about to overtake for fifth position when his gearbox fails. He's drifting in neutral as his car dramatically loses speed. Hamilton is helpless, overtaken by a series of cars as he rolls slowly along the track. The McLaren garage quickly get on the radio with instructions for resetting his onboard computer. After an agonizing 30 seconds, he gets the car working again. But by the time he rejoins the race, he's in 18th position. Meanwhile, at the front of the pack, the two Ferraris are in the lead. First Massa, then Raikkonen ahead of Alonso. But if the race ended now, the title would be Alonso's. Only first place will do for Raikkonen to win the Drivers' Championship. So, Ferrari take action. They arrange the pit stops and fuel loads of their two cars to give Raikkonen the chance to overtake his teammate. It's a masterclass in Formula One teamwork. Lapping Hamilton on his way, Raikkonen brings it home to victory. His teammate Massa in second. Fernando Alonso comes in a distant third. Lewis Hamilton finally crosses the line in seventh. With 110 points, Kimi Raikkonen has won the 2007 Drivers' Championship for Ferrari. Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso finished their season locked on 109 points apiece. The season has been decided by a single point. I mean, Sarah, this is just nuts. What a way to end.
Yeah, it was so exciting, Pete. It's extraordinary, really, that it was just separated by a single point. But it's not as rare as you might think. The F1 world title has actually been decided 9 times by 1 point or less.
What do you mean less than a point?
I know, it's weird, isn't it? In 1984, McLaren's Niki Lauda beat his McLaren teammate, yes, those again, by half a point.
If Lewis and Fernando are on the same points, how do they decide between them?
Well, Pete, it's all about countback. Who has the most wins, the most second places? Now, Hamilton and Alonso have the same number of race wins in 2007, but Hamilton has more second place finishes than Alonso. And that basically means Lewis Hamilton finishes second in the Drivers' Championship and Fernando Alonso is in third. That's how close it was between them, but they will both have felt like they lost that day.
Devastating for McLaren.
I always say it should have been our best year ever. We had all the ingredients for the perfect Formula One season. Two best drivers and the best car. We should have absolutely smashed it.
Incredible for Ferrari.
It was hard to believe in our chances to win. So Paolo had been probably one of the biggest miracles, definitely in Ferrari history, but also in the history of Formula One. But personally, for me, the victory in Brazil, that championship, was the best memory I have, probably in my life.
The biggest miracle in the history of Formula One. It's fair to say the red team cannot believe their luck. And what of their star driver, Kimi Raikkonen? The man who came from behind to beat the reigning world champion and most successful rookie of all time. He's the Finn who got the win. So, how to celebrate? Lewis Hamilton was there.
Most drivers, you know, when you win the world championship, it's the pinnacle of your career. And it's something that you're going to celebrate wildly and you're going to be in the pit lane with everybody and all the rest of it. And I remember about an hour after the race had finished, Raikkonen had been around the Ferrari team, and he was going off with his mate. He jumped into a car and drove off, went off to a nightclub somewhere. You know, it was a most peculiar ending to a peculiar season. That's 2007 for you.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the end of the 2007 season. But in this sport, there's no time to bask in victory or sit and wallow in defeat. The reset for next season is almost immediate. Here's Jane Nottage.
Formula One, it's all about tomorrow, isn't it? And things get forgotten very easily because it's such a driven sport. I know it sounds like a cliche, but it is. You go forward, 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 forward in your personal development, forward in your technical excellence, forward in what you can achieve, forward in winning races, forward in winning a championship. It doesn't look backwards.
So how did our cast of characters move forward from the dramatic events of 2007? Well, Ron Dennis wanted to stay on until he won a world championship with Lewis Hamilton. And he did it in the very next year, in 2008. Another skin-of-the-teeth battle in Brazil against, you guessed it, Ferrari. In 2009, he stepped down as team principal, becoming chairman, but nothing's ever simple in F1, and he finally left McLaren, not entirely of his own free will, in 2017. After 5 decades in Formula One, and so much success, and so many titles, and so much drama, Ron is currently penning his autobiography. We look forward to the chapter on Spygate. For Max Mosley, there was no let-up in the drama. Unbelievably, he had to deal with a second spying drama in 2007. This time, Renault was charged with unauthorised possession of McLaren data. How the tables turn, eh? Despite being found to have breached the same rule as McLaren, Renault escaped without punishment. Just 1 year later, in 2008, there were calls for Max's resignation as FIA president following allegations that he attended a Nazi-themed orgy. Mosley denied the Nazi element and successfully sued the News of the World for breaching his privacy and was awarded £60,000 in damages. Mosley went on to campaign for privacy laws and press reform. He even took the fight to Google. For Mosley, his greatest legacy was saving lives at the racetrack and on the road. He was the driving force behind a program of mandatory crash tests, something he viewed as his real work. In 2021, Mosley was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Choosing not to continue in agonizing pain, he took his own life on the 23rd of May, aged 81. Fernando Alonso and McLaren made the mutual decision to terminate his contract at the end of the 2007 season. In the years since, he's raced for Renault, Ferrari, and even McLaren again. In fact, when he re-signed with the British team in 2014, standing next to Ron, he said he was happy with everything he'd done in F1, with one exception, 2007. He's never won that third world title. At the end of 2018, Alonso retired from F1, but he carried on racing, winning the 24 Hours of Le Mans and coming pretty close at the Indy 500. He even gave the Dakar Rally a try. In 2021, he made a shock return to F1, and next year, in 2023, he'll join Aston Martin and be the oldest driver on the grid. Legend. Like Ron, he's writing an autobiography and we'll be comparing notes. As for Lewis Hamilton, well, you've probably heard. 2007 marked the beginning of an unstoppable rise to the very top of F1. He won his first championship with McLaren the following year in 2008, and by 2020 had equaled Michael Schumacher's record of 7 drivers' championships. He's earned more race wins, pole positions, and podium finishes than any other driver in Formula One history. 15 years on from Spygate, Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso are still racing each other in Formula One. And after all they've both achieved, they're still in each other's orbits. In a way, they continue to be defined by each other. In fact, Lewis has said this year that Fernando Alonso was his strongest ever competitor. And what about those old rivals, McLaren and Ferrari? How have they fared? It feels almost wrong to say it, but Ferrari's amazing win in 2007, that's the last time they've won to date, right, Sarah?
Yeah, I know, Pete. They did win the Constructors' title in 2008, but Kimi Raikkonen was their last Drivers' Champion. The wait for Ferrari's next world champion goes on. And the longer the wait, the more the anxiety grows. Can you imagine how it feels in Italy and all the Tifosi fans that come to the races at Monza? They must be getting very stressed. The thing is, the tide always turns in Formula One eventually. Sometimes a team enjoys just the briefest moment in the sun, and sometimes a team stamps its authority on the grid, like Mercedes, who won 7 years on the trot, and mainly with that man, Lewis Hamilton.
So what happened to McLaren?
After the end of the season, in December 2007, the FIA did send a technical delegation to McLaren's factory to make sure that no Ferrari data was being used to design the 2008 car. The search involved interviewing 20 McLaren engineers, accessing 22 personal computers, and trawling through 75 million pages of data.
It really puts those 780 pages of Ferrari info into the shade.
I know, Pete. And the cars were given the all clear. Good news for McLaren. But what the search did turn up was that more people at McLaren knew about the Coughlin Stepney Ferrari data than the team had previously realised. The FIA even found an email talking about their, quote, mole in Ferrari.
Did they apologise for that?
Yes, they did. On the 5th of December 2007, McLaren held its hands up and they apologised to the FIA, sending a formal letter over to them.
And how did they cope with that enormous fine?
There were mixed feelings about how fair McLaren's fine was. Some people thought it was the right punishment for the offence and others thought it was harsh. Andrew Benson says the Spygate fine nearly ended the team.
It's no exaggeration to say this nearly tore McLaren apart. This came very close to ending McLaren as a company. A $100 million fine is hard for any company to sustain that. I think there's an argument to be made that McLaren are only just now beginning to properly recover.
Since 2008, McLaren have won the odd Grand Prix, but no more titles in F1. But apparently the money from their fine, that mega fine, has been used by the FIA for grassroots initiatives in motorsports around the world. So maybe it did some good for someone.
OK, but what about the two men who set the wheels of Spygate in motion, Nigel Stepney and Mike Coughlin?
Well, they were both handed two-year bans by the FIA from working in motorsport, and that cut them off from the industry they loved. In 2009, Mike Coughlin had to pay a fine of €180,000 in exchange for the Italian court dropping charges against him, and similar fines applied to a few other key McLaren personnel as well. After his ban expired, Mike joined the Williams F1 team for a couple of years before leaving again. He still works with race cars. We did try to speak to him, but he didn't respond to our attempts. Nigel Stepney fought allegations against him until September 2010, when he agreed a deal with Italian prosecutors. He was handed a 20-month suspended prison sentence, a small fine, and a not guilty verdict. He went into another area of motorsport, running cars with quite a bit of success, actually, at the legendary Le Mans race, among others. But he never returned to F1. In 2014, in an accident that hasn't been fully explained, Nigel Stepney died. He was hit by a lorry on the M20. Suggested initially to be a suicide, it was eventually ruled by a coroner as an open verdict. Jane Nottage knew him personally.
Nigel was fantastic. He was one of my best friends in Formula One. And I still don't believe everything that happened that year. I think it probably was just an unfortunate occurrence, because I think Nigel probably was tired. He probably stepped out to get a breath of fresh air.
A tragic end to the Spygate era.
I think this whole Nigel's death, the way that things ended, it's obviously the end of what happened in 2007. I think that Formula One really looked into the abyss in 2007 and realised that this couldn't happen ever again, and it hasn't happened ever again.
Is Spygate still a big deal now in 2022?
Well, we're talking about it, aren't we, 15 years later, so...
Looking back across my 45 years, the 2007 season stands out as an extraordinary year. I mean, I still can't believe it happened. the extent of it, the size of the information that was passed over, the way it was done, the fuss it caused, the fact that it happened to McLaren of all teams, to Ron Dennis of all people. 2007, never known anything like it before nor since. I can't think of anything else to say.
People don't talk about it on a daily basis in Formula One anymore, but it will haunt the people involved for as long as they live.
And then, what about the two people we began this series with, back in a photocopy shop in sleepy Surrey?
It seems impossible when you tell the story now. How could somebody be so stupid? Trudy Coughlan, the wife of Mike Coughlan, the McLaren chief designer. The idea that a woman could walk into a photocopy shop in Woking with 780 pages of Formula One technical information and asked for it to be photocopied. It's I'm laughing about it now, 15 years later, because it's just so remarkably imbecilic. Why didn't she buy a photocopier?
Ah, yes, Trudy Coughlan. Whatever happened to her?
Well, we tried to get hold of Trudy as well, but she never responded to our messages. Let's hope she's got her own printer scanner now, though.
And Gary from the photocopy shop, you could say he had more impact on the season than anyone else.
Yes, this story all started with one man and his love for Ferrari. And it ended like that too. As a token of their gratitude, Ferrari gave Gary a special secret invitation to their end of season party. Most of the esteemed guests that day would have walked right past him, but Luca Colliani knew who he was, and he remembers the moment they met.
Instinctively, I remember I hugged him, because, yeah, he had been part, instrumental part of the story of the life of myself in the last, the previous 3-4 months. I felt that a hug was the just a small gesture to thank him for what he had done. Very likely, you never say never, very likely without that email, we hadn't discovered anything. And who knows what could have been the end of that championship as well.
I bet that was the best email he ever sent. Coming to the end of our series, if there's one thing we can say for sure, it's that F1 is a sport that pushes everyone involved to the limit.
There's no hiding in Formula One from who you are, and there's no hiding who you are from the public. The intensity of the environment is so great that the truth of you is on display. Eventually, who you are is laid bare to the world. Because it seems like there's no other way to be, because it matters so much to people. And so you get these incredible scenarios happening where people behave in a way that most people in normal life would never behave. And this is one of the most extreme examples of that.
In a year when it felt like F1 had lost its head, how did people remind themselves what they loved about the sport?
What we used to do, a couple of us, when the cars were gathering on the grid, but we used to, the ones with the red access all areas, I'd get on the grid and most people would be looking at the cars or the drivers or the stars or whatever. And I used to just walk to the bottom where the cars were coming round and joining the grid. And it was just at that moment that everything, all of the crap, all of the rubbish, all of the gossiping, all of the who's done what, everything stopped. In this moment of just real calm, because that was the moment when it became a sport again. And that was the moment when they were, these 20, 21, 22 drivers gathered to race. And that, I felt, was the moment when it was honest. When it was just going to be racing.
If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode or the whole series, let us know. You can email us on spygate@bbc.co.uk. We'll be back soon with a panel of F1 experts who can help fill in the gaps. So watch this space for updates. Spygate is a Chalk and Blade production for BBC Sounds. The producers are Matt Nielsen and Rosie Stouffer. Mixing, sound design and original music by Alex Portfelix. The showrunner is Sarah Stollarts. Head of production is Lily Ames. The executive producers are Ruth Barnes and Jason Phipps. The commissioning editors at the BBC are Dylan Haskins and Stevie Middleton. The co-host and story editor is Sarah Holt. And the host is me, Pete Tong.
And reaction after each Grand Prix from the expert Five Live Formula One team with the Checkered Flag podcast.
What a race that was!
Listen on BBC Sounds.